that which should stir our hearts to praise is the consideration of our God, who sits on the throne of irresistible wisdom and power. Throughout the history of the world, the carnal ambitions of sinners have driven some of them to extreme measures in order to obtain the ability to control the lives of others, even if only for a time. Pockmarking the pages of the history books are the accounts of those who engaged in acts of desperate warfare and unspeakable terrorism just to secure the government of part of the world. Some have set their sights higher, and like Genghis Khan or Napoleon or Hitler or Stalin, have moved far beyond their own territories in bids to spread their own ideas and power over as broad an area as possible. Some, the bare mention of whose names could generate waves of fear, found themselves overwhelmed at the last by those they had tormented. Adolf Hitler put a pistol in his mouth and blew out his brains. Napoleon became a prisoner on an island. Joseph Stalin, who many estimates say was responsible for the slaughter of 80 million people, ended his days in this world in abject misery. The conquerors whom many have feared and before whom they were in trepidation have vanished from the world. And the mention of their names no longer has the same effect it once did. In our own country, the unerring rhythm of elections vaults people into places of prominence and civic power, only to cast them back into places of obscurity and inability. It is the ultimate irony that as soon as someone is elected to the presidency, attention begins to turn to the scramble to succeed him. And there is the commentary on the extremely temporal character of all worldly power. But our Bible reading today brings us to the powerful truth that there is someone who is not affected by the changes in the world's governments. Civilizations have come and gone. Kingdoms have risen and fallen. Tyrants have strutted for a while under the delusion of their supreme dominance and then have become spectacles when their imagined power evaporated like the morning mist in the mountains. But there is one throne that knows no ebb and flow. There is one king who does not campaign for election. There is one ruler whose authority is not going to be overthrown by the defiance of any of his subjects. He is the Lord. He is the eternal Jehovah. He is the creator of all things and the sustainer of all things. He is the master of all things in one way or another. His purposes will always prevail. His authority will always be secure. His people will always be preserved. It is always good for us in the aftermath of a national election, whatever the outcome, to reflect on the truth of this text. Let us consider today heaven's sovereign. We learn a lot about heaven's sovereign in the words of this psalm. We learn that he is the provider of benefits, that he is the forgiver of iniquities. We learn that he is the healer of diseases. We learn that he is the satisfier of his people. And yet at the same time, he is the executor of judgment. We learn that he is merciful. And that his mercy is from everlasting to everlasting. Now if we were to take those statements one by one, there would be enough in them to engender our praise and adoration of heaven's sovereign for this day and for the rest of our days in this world. But I want us today to give our attention to the words of our text and to dwell on three great truths that we find expounded there. First, his universal dominion. And here the operative words in our text are at the end of it, where we read, his kingdom ruleth over all. Now that expression has to do, obviously, with every kind of principality that exists in the world. Every kind of structure that exists in the world. God is saying here, he is asserting his sovereign control over you, over your life, so that whatever you imagine that you are going to do, God is saying he governs your life. He is asserting his sovereign control over your family. He is asserting his sovereign control over your vocation, over what you do in this life. He is asserting his sovereign control over your city, over your county, over your state, over your nation. We could be talking about Bangladesh, or Brazil, or the islands of Samoa. The one of whom our text speaks has dominion over all those places. Whatever the people in those places may think, whether they give the ruler over those places any thought at all, God is saying he is the sovereign over them. Is God impressed by the pronouncements of the rulers of this world, by the leaders of these governments? Not at all. Let us turn to Isaiah, to the last chapter of Isaiah, chapter 66. And to verse 1. Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. You're familiar with a footstool. You're familiar with that thing that you use if you need a little extra height. Our older granddaughter, when we were there at their home in September, was sorry that the little footstool that she had used in order to get her up to the sink in the bathroom so she could brush her teeth had broken. She didn't have a way to get up there. She has a new one now, we've been told. But you don't realize the importance of such a thing until you don't have it. And yet, what is a footstool? It is just a humble device that is used to assist even children. The Lord is saying, that's the earth to Him. That's His footstool. All of the dominions of this world, whether they imagine they have great power and great resources or not, they are His footstool. God looks on the pronouncements of the world's rulers with amusement. Every piece of gibberish that spews from the mouths of people like Hugo Chavez or anyone else, God looks on that with amusement. These people think they are so important and so powerful. God looks on them as His footstool. This dominion is found and expounded in the New Testament as being the particular possession of Jesus Christ. Let us turn to Ephesians, first of all, to chapter 1. Ephesians chapter 1. And let us look at verse 20. Here the apostle, the inspired apostle, is speaking of the power that was demonstrated in the resurrection of Christ. In verse 20, which He wrought in Christ when He raised Him from the dead and set Him at His own right hand in the heavenly places, far above all principality and power and might and dominion, and every name that is named, not only in this world, but also in that which is to come, and hath put all things under His feet, and gave Him to be the head over all things to the church, which is His body, the fullness of Him that filleth all in all. Do you notice the hierarchy that's established there? All of the principalities, all of the dominions of this world are put under the feet of Christ. They are His footstool. But then above all those principalities, we find the church, which is His body. He is the head. The relationship between Him and the church is different than the relationship between Him and the principalities of the world. They are His footstool. The church is His body. He is the head of the body. So that the people who belong to the church of Jesus Christ are in a different relationship to this great sovereign than the highest officers of the governments of the world. Let us turn to 1 Peter. Chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. We look at verse 18, first of all. For Christ also hath once suffered for sins, the just for the unjust, that He might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, and but quickened by the Spirit. And then there follows a parenthesis of sorts, which refers back to the days of Noah. But we come down to verse 22, and we read concerning Jesus Christ, who is gone into heaven, following His resurrection, who has gone into heaven and is on the right hand of God. Notice this. Angels and authorities and powers being made subject unto him by reason of his death and his resurrection and his ascension, his exaltation. He is now in the place of sovereignty, and everything in this world, whether tangible or intangible, is in subjection unto him. He is ruling. It's a universal dominion. Now let's understand the implications of that universal dominion. It means that our lives and our happiness and our joy is not determined on the basis of who wins an election. Our happiness and our joy is determined on the basis of this one great truth. Our God is ruling over all. He is reigning right now. But there is another implication. And that implication is that he is reigning over you. Individually, he is reigning over you. Whether you submit willingly to his reign or not, whether you are still in rebellion against his reign or not, he is reigning over you. And what's the argument then? If he is ruling over all, why do you not surrender and submit yourself to that rule? Why do you not come in faith to Jesus Christ and bow before him and let him become your master and your Lord? His universal dominion. Oh, I love the words in that text. Over all. No exceptions. Not even the devil escapes that dominion. But let us come to the second truth that we find expounded in our text. His unescapable domination. In the first point of this message, we dealt more with the extensiveness of his rule. Now we're going to deal more with the fact of his rule. We are told in our text that his kingdom rules over all. And let's consider the nature of this rule. The word that we confront here is a general term for reigning or exercising the power of government. It's a word for governing. It's not a word that speaks of detachment or disinterest. Well, the people of the world like to comfort themselves with the idea, well, God's not really that involved. He doesn't really pay attention to what goes on. Let me tell you, God is not detached from his creation. Here is a word that speaks of direct involvement and supervision. The language of supervision is the language of the workplace. We're familiar with the concept of supervision. It's the language of the home. It may be that there will be occasions in the home where the children will not be in direct line of sight supervision from the parents. But does that mean the parents are not supervising? Well, ideally, they should be supervising still. So the idea that just because the parent cannot see the child does not mean that the supervision has been taken away. The child may think that, Mommy can't see me. Daddy can't see me. Therefore, I can do this. But parents usually have ways of seeing that children don't understand. God is involved. Now Nebuchadnezzar as we considered on Wednesday evening at the prayer meeting, came to learn exactly the style of this rule. Let's turn to that portion again that we considered in Daniel chapter 4. Daniel chapter 4. We're obviously not going to read the lengthy portion we read Wednesday evening. But let's look at verse 25. This is the interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. That they shall drive thee, Daniel said, from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. Daniel was saying, Nebuchadnezzar, you have got something to learn. You imagine that you are the supreme ruler in the world. And Nebuchadnezzar was one of the mightiest rulers the world has ever seen. I had to laugh at the pretentious ambitions of Saddam Hussein, who styled himself as the world's new Nebuchadnezzar. He didn't come anywhere close. Perhaps in some aspects of his terrorism he did, but otherwise he didn't come anywhere close. But Nebuchadnezzar had to be taught that he was not the supreme ruler. And the whole point of the experience he was going to have were basically he went insane. He was insane. No, they didn't take him down to the asylum and have him evaluated. The people just cast him out into the wilderness. And he went and lived among the animals and got to where he looked just like one of them. He lost his mind. And what was the purpose of it? It was so that he could be brought to understand that God was the supreme ruler. And that he occupied his place only by reason of God's purpose and God's will. He came to understand it. Look at verse 34 of the same chapter. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation, and all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. And he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? Nebuchadnezzar came to understand it. He came to understand that the Lord had prepared his throne in the heavens, and that his kingdom rules over all. The comments of Charles Spurgeon are very much to the point here. Spurgeon wrote about his government, there is no alarm, no disorder, no perturbation, no hurrying to and fro in expedience, no surprises to be met or unexpected catastrophes to be warded off. All is prepared and fixed, and he himself has prepared and fixed it. He is no delegated sovereign for whom a throne is set up by another. He is an autocrat, and his dominion arises from himself and is sustained by his own innate power. This matchless sovereignty is the pledge of our security, the pillar upon which our confidence may safely lean. What Spurgeon is saying there is, here is the ground of our confidence, not the identity of whoever occupies the White House or 10 Downing Street or the palace of the president on the Champs-Élysées in Paris. We don't base our confidence upon those things. Our confidence rests on this great truth that God is ruling. He is involved intimately. Spurgeon went on to say, He now reigns universally. He always has done so, and He always will. To us, the world may seem rent with anarchy, but He brings order out of confusion. The warring elements are marching beneath His banner when they most wildly rush onward in furious tempest. Great and small, intelligent and material, willing and unwilling, fierce or gentle, all are under His sway. His is the only universal monarchy. He is the blessed and only potentate, King of kings and Lord of lords. A clear view of His ever-active and everywhere supreme providence is one of the most delightful of spiritual gifts. He who has it cannot do otherwise than bless the Lord with all his soul. Let that be our confidence. Let that be our comfort. I spoke earlier of Saddam Hussein. He strutted on the world stage for a time and boasted of all he was going to do. He made life miserable for those who were under his tyranny. But he is no more in this world. And God is still ruling on his throne in heaven. So when I listen to the pronouncements of aspiring rulers or aspiring politicians, what they aim to do, Napoleon was the one who said when he prepared to invade Russia and he was warned about the dangers, he said, I propose and I dispose. But he didn't count on the snow. And it was his invasion of Russia that led to his end. Time and time again, I've listened to rulers of this world say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to hit the ground running, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. And they have no idea what the circumstances will be that they will confront. His unescapable domination. He is ruling. He is ruling. And there's one last thought that we find expounded in our text. His unchangeable determination. We read in this text, He has prepared His throne in the heavens. What does that mean? It means that heaven's sovereign is never going to abandon His eternal purposes. Now that has a great store of comfort in it, because it means, regarding His people, He will never abandon His purposes concerning them. He's not going to leave them to fall short of getting to heaven. He's not going to leave them to fall short of glory. He's not going to take them a long part of the journey and then say, okay, it's up to you now. He's not going to leave one of his people to perish. That's part of his determination. If you belong to Christ, you can take comfort in this. He has prepared his throne in the heavens. His determination is also that the world, that the devil has polluted and corrupted with his perversion, will be restored to its pristine glory, and that all those who defy his rule will be brought to judgment at last. That's his determination. And it doesn't matter who the President of the United States may be at any time, the determination of the ruler in heaven is going to prevail. You see, when the people of God come to maintain the view that is taught in this text, when they maintain the long view of the events of this world, they learn to derive their happiness from the truth that God is in heaven, and that God, from his throne in heaven, is ruling in this world. They can rest in the certainty that his will is being done, and they can pray to that end, let thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. And whatever the particular details of the working out of that will are, they can rest in this confidence: God has not lost control. They can pray for the extension of his kingdom, and they can labor to that end by proclaiming the glad tidings of Christ and preaching the message of the cross. His determination cannot be changed. God has a purpose. His multiple purposes, really, when it comes to the world and his people in the world. And you can be sure, as surely as we are sitting here today, you can be sure that it doesn't matter what people in this world say or do. Oh, they may despise those who carry the message that there is a supreme ruler in heaven and that his name is not Allah or anything else. They may despise that, but they can't change the reality of it. Jesus Christ came into this world. And anybody who wants to cast doubt upon the existence of God, Jesus Christ came into this world. And what did he do? He manifested God in the flesh. We go by what Jesus taught concerning this world. And we can be sure of the reality of this text, that his kingdom, the kingdom of heaven's sovereign, is ruling over all, and it will continue to rule. 100 years ago, there was an election for president. Every 4 years there is one. In that election, the incumbent president was Theodore Roosevelt. He had served as president for nearly 8 years. He could have continued to serve, but elected not to run. His hand-picked successor was a man named William Howard Taft, who won the election in 1908, and the name of his opponent I don't even recall at this point, but I'm sure at that time it was considered to be somebody with great opportunity to do great things. But you know, apart from those who have to study history or who want to study history, not many could tell you today who the name of the person was who won the election 100 years ago. And that is a lesson in the fleeting nature of temporal power. But God's throne is still in heaven, and He is ruling, and He will rule. And that means we must submit ourselves to His rule, to His government. We must submit ourselves to His word. And I trust that today, if you do not know the Lord, you will come to trust in Him and come under the willing rule of His throne.